This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. District Council 37 is the city's largest union of city workers. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on Sunday evenings at 8 p.m., and then we rebroadcast again Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. On March 16th, Fire Department EMT Yadira Arroyo, a 14-year veteran and mother of five, was working an overtime shift on her day off. Yadira Arroyo's job is to save lives, being ready to save a New Yorker's life, anyone's life, at a moment's notice. But tragically, March 16th would be different. Police say a known gang member with a history of mental illness killed her and injured her partner while attempting to steal their ambulance in the Bronx. Joining us now by phone to talk about this horrible incident and the dangers EMS workers face on the job is Local 2507 President Israel Miranda, whose local represents FDNY EMTs and paramedics. Izzy, you've been a guest on this show many times. This is a very difficult conversation to have, brother.
Yes, it is. First of all, let me say thank you for having me on and to all your listeners. This is a very rough time, not just for the family, but for the 4,446 EMTs and paramedics from District Council 37, FDNY.
There has been an incredible outpouring of support. The Daily News has taken up the cause. I know that the National Union has made a contribution. DC 37 is making a contribution. There have been vigils, press services, and it really is a testament to the work that EMTs do and paramedics do every day, and also to the dangers that they face while on the job. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, what's very troublesome to me is that it takes a tragedy like this for people to want to listen how difficult the work is that EMTs and paramedics do on a day-to-day basis and how dangerous it is, you know. And right now, everyone is still in shock, even though this happened a few days ago, with mixed emotions of sadness and anger.
Right, right, right.
And this has continued during this process. Today is the viewing. Tomorrow there will be another viewing. And Saturday the actual funeral will take place.
We should note that we taped this a few days ahead of the airing, so by the time that this goes on the air, the funeral would have been held. And tell us a little bit about Yadira Arroyo.
We affectionately called her Yadi.
Yadi, I like that.
Short for Yadira. Yadira, short for Yadira. And she was a matron at that location, that work location. She was such a loved person with a great personality. I spoke to a regular civilian in a little park across the street, a partition, and he was in a wheelchair, and I overheard him saying what a sweet woman she was, and I struck a conversation with him just to find out how he knew her. And one of the things he told me is that this lady who was always working and there all the time, anytime he was hungry and he conveyed that to her, she went in her pocket and gave her her money so this guy could eat with no questions asked. And at the same time, she has five children.
Jeez. There was the fire department photo, which got into the newspapers, which we put on our website. Beautiful face, and just a woman who clearly was just, there was something very special about her, and you could tell it in her eyes.
She, from what I was told, she had a smile that would just open people up and a personality that would just bring people together, and they would feel very comfortable around her. she had that gift. It takes a special person to do what we do. Of course, we're about emergency medical care, but you also have to communicate and bond with the citizens in the community and the people that you are helping. And she had that special gift.
Let's talk a little bit about, I remember we were, you were on this show, you've been a regular guest on this show. We were talking about the dangers of being an EMT paramedic and about trying to get legislation that would make it an added crime, I think, a stiffer crime for assaulting a EMT or paramedic.
Yes, it is a Class D felony for assaulting an emergency medical service worker in the state of New York. This is a very dangerous job. You come to the scenes, you come to people's houses, you knock on the door. You never know what you're going to expect. Many times you're the first one there. Even when there's a tragedy in the street, a shooting, a stabbing, you get there, the scene may not be controlled. The perpetrator may still be around. There's so many things. It's so dynamic and stressful. The burden that these people have when they get to a scene of something tragic.
Well, I mean, it's hard to overstate the amount of the unknown that one faces on a call. You don't know what you're getting into or what is happening exactly as you arrive on the scene.
Especially these days where we live in a different world, where we have to worry about terrorism, Ebola, and the many other things that could happen in a city as great as New York.
And it's big. I mean, there are the millions of folks who are here. You don't know what any given situation could turn into.
Exactly, exactly. And these men and women are dedicated, and, you know, to do this job, and they do it because they love the job. But it's unfortunate that they're not recognized by the city as a true uniform service, and they're definitely not compensated like everyone else who's a first responder and serves their community and their city.
Now, you announced a bill on March 16th that involves pensions and disability pensions. Could you talk a little bit about that while we're talking on the subject of trying to make life easier for EMTs and paramedics?
Yes. Many EMTs and paramedics have been denied disability pensions by the NYSERS Medical Board. What happens is that the agency you work for deems you unable to continue in that capacity based on the physically taxing work that you do, so they deem you disabled. So you go on a workers' compensation, which you can't support your family on that, so you have no option but to put in for a disability pension. Many of our members have been denied disability pensions by the NYSERS board, whether it's injury-related or WTC-related, and they just make them run through hoops. What this bill does, let me give you a quick update on how the process works. You bring your medical evidence in your application to the NYSERS board. They can deny you, and they do deny many. At that point, you have two options. One of them is that you can waive your rights to going in front of a Supreme Court judge and go in front of a three-doctor board that's picked by the NYSERS medical board for a final decision. Most people do not like that process. They rather go through what's called an Article 78 through civil service law, where you present your application and its evidence to a honorable Supreme Court judge from New York State. But the problem here is that this judge does not have the ability to grant you the pension based on the medical evidence that you have put forward with your application. Their only power is to look at it and say, well, listen, we don't think you were treated fairly or this was considered, this evidence. We're going to remand it back to the same medical board that denied you to begin with. That creates
a catch 22 situation.
Exactly, a back and forth. Right. They can bounce you back and forth for years. And every time they go to an Article 78, the member has to pay for his own legal services and representation, which could go up to at least $10,000.
So what does this bill do?
What this bill does, in Social Security law or workers' comp, a judge has the authority to grant you a pension based on the evidence that was put in with your application. What this law does is give that judge, that Supreme Court judge, the ability to be a judge and actually grant someone a disability pension who was done wrong.
And now that bill is that bill is in Albany. I mean, that what is the status of this now?
In committees at this time, I believe the finance committees, and in the Assembly and the Senate, it's sponsored by the Honorable Senator Marty Golden and the Honorable Assemblyman Peter Abate.
All right, listen, before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to talk to about? We've got a minute left. Is there anything else you wanted to say about anything about the work that's going on?
Yes, I'm grateful, and all 4,000 members are grateful for the support we've been getting from the citizens of New York City. But the bigger issue here is it took a tragedy for people to recognize us, what we do on a day-to-day basis. And unfortunately, besides justice for our sister Yachty, we need changes. People need to recognize that other people in the 911 system that are emergency responders make twice as much as these young men and women that put their lives on the line on a day-to-day basis. And this needs to change.
Israel Miranda, president of Local 2507, which represents fire department, EMTs, and paramedics. May the force be with you, Izzy.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all our listeners, and God bless.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. President Trump's recently released budget and the House Republicans' bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act could cost the state and city billions in federal funding for Medicaid, health care, housing, and other areas. To address this bleak outlook, DC 37 has supported the movement to extend and expand the millionaire tax and close a carried interest loophole, which benefits hedge fund managers and others on Wall Street. Basically, we're talking about fair share taxes here. And joining us now to make the case is Fiscal Policy Institute Executive Director Ronald Deutsch. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We're talking about how to pay for services, and we're saying that millionaires and billionaires have and can afford to help pay their fair share, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're saying. I think we're talking about paying for a variety of different services that the state provides and other programs and services as well that serve the poor, the needy, the vulnerable, what have you. So we think that there's plenty of room at the top for an increase in the marginal rates. And right now, really, the debate centers around three possibilities. One is the elimination or the expiration of the top rate. One is the extension of the current top rate, which is what the governor proposes. And then the third that we support is the expansion of the top rates, which is what the assembly has put forward as well. And something that we've been pushing for a very long time now.
I saw an editorial in the Daily News, which said, yes, we should extend the millionaire's tax. But, you know, if we expanded the millionaire's taxes, people are going to move away from New York. I've been hearing variations of that argument all my life, and I'm an old guy now. And people don't leave New York. They stay in New York because New York is New York. And
right.
Throw in your two cents on this.
So a couple of things on this, Chris. Some of the more interesting pieces to note. Since the millionaire's tax went into effect in 2009, it was just reported in Gannett News that there's been a 63% increase in the number of millionaires living in New York. So this notion that somehow, you know, the millionaire's tax is driving people away, it's just completely unfounded and not true. And there's been numerous studies out there, Stanford University and Christabel Young had done a study that really looked at the fact that wealthy people tend to stay put because they have so many different connections to their communities, whether those are philanthropic or you know, memberships or associations, things like that. And the other reality is people move when they're seeking economic opportunity. Obviously, the wealthiest New Yorkers have found their economic opportunity. So, but the other thing I would note, just to refute this as well, from the very people that people are claiming are going to leave, we released a letter working with the Responsible Wealth Project, which is a national group of wealthy philanthropists and inheritors and whatnot, who, you know, want to make sure that the tax structure is fair and progressive. And they penned a letter to the governor and legislative leaders calling on them to extend and expand the millionaire's tax in New York, and basically told them, you know, we're not going to move anywhere if this tax increases. And as a matter of fact, we think it should, because we want to pay our fair share and make sure that we can address some of the, you know, glaring unmet needs that exist in New York State.
And let's take a step back. How wide is the gap between the 1% in New York and the rest of us?
Yeah, so I'll give you a sense. In New York City, the top 1% gets about 41% of all the income. So, I mean, think about that, right? This small fraction of people getting 41% of all the income. I mean, literally the bottom 50% is sharing less than 10% of the income. So wealth is very concentrated, and if you look at the progression of that, you'll note that, you know, in 1980, the top 1% had about 12% of the income, and it's been steadily rising ever since then, and that's largely attributable to our tax policy in both New York and at the federal level. Remember what happened in the 1980s. We moved towards the trickle-down supply-side economic model and slashed federal income tax rates. We slashed New York State income tax rates to their lowest levels. So that resulted in the folks at the top gaining more and more of the pie.
And during the same time, you know, which we always want to point out, which I think is a very valid point to make, in those 30 years, union membership has declined.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, we all know that unions are kind of the last line of defense for the middle class. You know, they fight for adequate wages and push back against corporate employers or what have you. So we need more unions, not less. And I'm hoping people will start to realize that.
And the fact that, you know, unions are not just unions don't just protect their own members. Everyone, where there's lots of unions, there's better salaries and wages and earnings for all workers.
Right. Look at the unions in the fight for 15. I mean, my goodness, that's far from just a union fight, and that's a fight for everybody, for all low-wage workers out there. And I think the unions really showed that, you know, they were a driving force, whether we're talking about, you know, 1199 or DC 37. I mean, you know, you folks were really pushing very hard to get that to happen. And that's to the benefit of millions of New Yorkers.
Well, let me ask you something else. I was having a conversation with a very conservative former editorial writer for The Wall Street Journal, and we got onto this topic of income inequality. And he was talking about his cousin, who is, you know, a rural blue-collar worker who doesn't care a whit about inequality. Let billionaires be billionaires. I just want to get my fair share of the pie. And this idea of income immobility, where the top 1% make more and more money, and that, in fact, as we've just been talking about, the wages of certain earners hasn't really increased in 30 years. So that kills the mobility of folks where in this great country where you think you work hard, you're going to get ahead. That notion has pretty much been in limbo for decades now.
Right. So we know that, you know, while the wealthiest 1% are seeing all the income gains, that wages largely for lower income workers have been relatively stagnant, although there was a slight uptick in median income this year, which was, you know, we were glad to see. But overall, I think the reality is this. You know, you look at when we had the greatest expansion of the middle class in this country, and a couple of things were happening at that time. You know, one was the union movement was growing, right? It was kind of post-World War II. But more importantly, we had very high tax rates on the wealthiest Americans, and we used that money to invest in growing the middle class. So we created, like, the GI Bill, for instance, which helped people buy their homes, start businesses, go to college. Those are the type of investments that grow the middle class and increase mobility substantially. So I think the reality of the situation is we have to kind of go back to those times.
And by the way,
I don't want to make those too idealistic, but, you know.
No, but during those times, there were rich people. And they were rich,
absolutely.
And they lived the lives of rich people. No one deprived rich people of their richness. But
and I think that's exactly what, you know, the wealthy 80 wealthy New Yorkers who signed the letter realizes that, you know, if my taxes go up 2% or 2.5%, you know, that's not going to affect my quality of life in any way, shape, or form. It's not going to cause me to move. It's not going to cause me to change behavior. So, you know, the reality is that the wealthy are doing just fine and, quite frankly, can afford to pay just a little bit more to the benefit of everybody else.
And I'm reminded of the Warren Buffett line. Oh, yeah, there's class warfare, all right. And my class declared it, and we're winning, right?
Getting our butts kicked.
And that's a really
class warfare.
Right. So this idea that somehow the beleaguered rich can't afford to. You're rich. That's where you've got the money. That's where.
Right.
That's how we get these services done. And at a time when seniors especially need affordable housing in New York City, how are you going to make that happen unless there are programs that are created that comes from tax dollars?
Right. And I think that's a perfect reason why we want to see the enactment of the mansion tax as well in New York City. So we're hoping that the New York State Legislature will pass that as well.
This is Thursday. We're on the air on Sunday. They're talking about taking a vote on the Affordable Care Act, on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Where do you think this thing winds up?
You know, I don't know, but I think, like everybody else, I'm really scared about the direction that this is moving. And I think that, you know, we have the potential to have billions of dollars of holes blown into our state budget here by the feds. And that's pretty scary right now. And I think that's all the more reason we need an expanded millionaire's tax, because we're going to need that revenue probably to make up for those federal funding cuts that are likely to come down the pike. I mean, you know, the repeal and replace may not happen the way that they're talking about right now, and it's hard to tell whether or not it's going to pass, but clearly they're moving in a direction that's not going to be good for New York State and our budget. So I think we need to keep that in mind. And you saw Andrew Cuomo yesterday when they started talking about repeal and replace and the potential impact on New York, that, hey, well, if this is going to happen, we're going to have to raise taxes in New York on, you know, on the income tax in particular. So we've got it's a very real threat at this point, and it's pretty scary.
We've got about a minute left. I just want to, I don't even know if you've got the answer to this, but could you explain to me how this Affordable Care Act repeal turns out into a tax break for the rich? Because I know that that's out there. I just don't understand exactly how that works. And while it may be complicated, is that in fact true, that this is going to turn into, that somehow the rich are going to get a tax break out of the repeal of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think the reality was that there were various provisions put in place under the ACA that asked the wealthy to pay more in subsidies and premiums and whatnot, and provided various tax breaks for corporations and other, you know, medical device companies and things like that. So they're looking at kind of repealing all of those taxes that were used to help pay for patient care. So and those taxes tend to be stilted towards the wealthiest. So as they repeal those, the wealthy will benefit yet again. And, you know, and then if the Trump tax plan goes through, there's another $20 billion windfall for New York's wealthiest 1% right there. So,
Fiscal Policy Institute Executive Director Ronald Deutsch, listen, thank you very much for coming on. I would like to call upon you again. This has been a very good conversation, sir.
Yeah, happy to come on anytime. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, time now for a few announcements. The DC 37 Disability Committee will hold a forum on Accesseride, the transportation service for people with disabilities. The forum will be at Union Headquarters, 125 Barclay Street, 6 p.m. on Monday, April 3rd, in the first floor gallery. Speakers will include city council members and a representative from the MTA. Also, President Trump has nominated an ultra-conservative to the Supreme Court whose decisions would threaten unions. Tell Senators Gillibrand and Schumer to reject Judge Neil Gorsuch. Call them at the U.S. Capitol switchboard at 202-224-3121. And finally, every 20 years, voters are asked whether the state should hold a constitutional convention. This question will be on the ballot in November. The answer is no. To find more about the Constitutional Convention, Judge Gorsuch, and any number of issues currently facing New Yorkers and all Americans, check out the DC 37 website, www.dc37.net. That's about all the time we have. I'm Chris Policano. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. The producer is Rudy Orozco. Until next time, ciao. We'll be right back.